Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. You can also listen online at our website, cjsf.ca, or as you might just have heard about, our app, which you can get in the App Store or the Google Play Store, depending on your phone, mobile device preference, I suppose, your operating system. And today on the show, I guess I should remind you that I am Jesse, or let you know, if this is your first time tuning in, that I am Jesse. And this program, Speak Up, is the CJSF Public Affairs Department's open format talk program, where Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, you will hear lots of different talk things, lots of different bits and pieces. Today, we have another interview produced by Public Affairs Department Work Study William with digital artist Juan Ramirez. So that will take up most of the hour, the last three quarters or so. And we've got a couple other little bits, probably just one, I guess, based on the amount of time we have. But of course, there will also be a little bit of music to transition between things. And as always, we are going to start with some brand new local music, because it's not always brand new. And today it's pretty brand new. It's from an album that comes out tomorrow on Friday, the new record, It's About Time, by Future Star, who is an amazing local pop, indie pop, dream pop artist, who is, as I have just said, putting out a full-length record tomorrow. There's a release party also tomorrow at the Red Gate, 1965 Main Street, Vancouver. You can see Future Star releasing the record It's About Time, along with the other great local bands, Worrywart, Be Afraid, and Non-La. It's going to be great. And I hope I will see you there. And to help convince you, I'm going to play for you the title track of the new record by Future Star, It's About Time.
It's not about the lines on your face. It's not about the bad knee. It's not about wishing that you were any younger or had something that young people have. It's about time. And it's about the notes that you choose. And it's about time. You did. It's not about the drinking. It's not about the mistakes and the accidents that happened or the friends that you lost along the way. It's about the people that stay and the people who could still come back. 'Cause it's about time, and anything if you wait long enough. It's about time. routes that you choose. And it's about time. And it's about the way that you fill someone else's shoes. And it's about time. And it's about the notes that you choose. And it's about time. And it's about the way that you fill someone else's shoes. And it's about
right as the clock tolls. It's About Time by Future Star, playing a really show tomorrow night, Friday, at Red Gate, along with Be Afraid, Worry Wart, and Non-Law. You can buy tickets on Eventbrite. You can find a link to that at Future Star's website, which is futurestar.rocks. Okay, we're going to move on to our next bit of the day. This is from Frequency News, the national collection of works produced by reporters in the Local Journalism Initiative. This piece comes to us from Louis Belcourt from CKTZ Cortez Island, and is about Sam Tudor, a recording artist based in Vancouver who is currently touring across BC to showcase their newly released EP, and recently included a show on Cortez Island as part of the tour. Tudor is a self-taught musician and recording artist who has been recording and releasing music since 2014. The show at Manson's Hall on Cortez Island marked Sam's debut performance on the island, arranged spontaneously following a recommendation from a friend with ties to Cortez. That happened on Tuesday, and CKTZ. It is July 4th, so maybe we can use the American pronunciation. Has more on this story.
This is a CKTZ news update. I'm Louis Belcourt.
Sam Tudor, a Vancouver-based recording artist, is performing their newly released EP across BC and has added a Cortez Island show to the tour. Sam is a self-taught musician and recording artist who has been recording and releasing music since 2014. The artist has never before performed on the island, but spontaneously booked the event at Manson's Hall when suggested to by a friend who has connections on Cortez. Hidden Minute, Sam's new EP, was released on June 15th. The release show will be in Vancouver on Friday, June 28th, and the Cortez show will be on Tuesday, July 2nd at Manson's Hall. I spoke with Sam for more on the release and the upcoming tour.
Hi, my name's Sam Tudor. I'm a songwriter and producer and musician. I grew up in rural interior British Columbia in the Cariboo region, but spend most of the time in Vancouver now. And
Where did you get your start in music?
I guess I started playing music in high school and I was just playing guitar, but I think I was more interested in recording before I was actually interested in being a musician. I discovered GarageBand and I just love the idea of recording and like on those early Macs. And I feel like I actually had to learn to play music after the fact just because I wanted something to record.
Did you go through any formal training or was recording just always a personal practice and sort of a self-taught thing?
No formal training at all. It was all self-taught. And I had a lot of time. I grew up at a kids camp in the woods in the Cariboo. My parents run a kids camp near Williams Lake. So it was pretty remote. And there was a lot of time to just mess around with things with my two brothers. And we made movies and wrote songs and had lots of time to listen to music on long bus rides. So definitely not any serious formal training, that's for sure.
You're quite prolific. You've released multiple albums and EPs at this point, and you're just coming out with this new EP called Hidden Minute. Is the tour that you're on right now a sort of your release tour for this new EP?
Yeah, it is. And it feels great. We've never really done it this way where we get to go on tour right after the EP comes out. The EP came out last Saturday, and then the day after we played the first show. So I'm really appreciating that. It feels a lot more immediate, especially because it took so long to finish the EP. So it feels like this celebration. And also the way I record is pretty internal, I guess. I do everything just in my room and one track at a time often. And so this is like the inverse of that, to get to play the songs with friends in a lot of different unique places. So it's refreshing.
Tell me about how this project feels different, or maybe even the same, of some of your other projects. What does this new release mean for you?
That's a good question. I feel this is definitely the first time where something I've made has felt really accurate. I feel like in the past, because so much of this recording that I've done is just trying to learn how to do it, and I really just love tinkering with and layering sounds in my room and stuff. And so a lot of the times the stuff I've recorded in the past, it just is a result of how much I know, or I'm limited by what's around me, what instruments are around me. And at this camp where I grew up, we only had a couple different instruments, and those kind of dictated how the record sounded. And I feel like now I have a lot of peers who I really love to record with, and I have enough tools now that I was able to actually make something that is more true to me. I guess with previous records, even though I'm proud of previous records, they were all the end product with me just being like, oh, I guess that's how that turned out. They were all just accidents. And this one feels like it was a little more, I was able to execute. I was able to step back and say, oh yeah, that is what I meant to say. So that's something that feels pretty different. And I've never done an EP before also. It was interesting to just only focus on four songs. And I actually did it because I thought it would be faster, because I'm pretty neurotic and I tend to beat myself up finishing an album. And I thought making an EP would be a little more chill, but I just ended up spending the same amount of energy on only four songs. So I don't know.
Cortez people are super excited to hear that you're actually adding a Cortez show to this tour. What brought you to book this show on Cortez?
One thing I'm really excited about the entire tour is that it's entirely house shows, with the exception of our Vancouver show. And last summer we toured with, you know, in larger venues and bars and stuff. But I thought it would be cool to just explore the songs in a really intimate setting. And we have a lot of connections to small towns in BC and the Cariboo. So it's just felt pretty good to drive around. And yeah, the whole tour has a really specific energy to it that's really different from anything I've done before, because of the nature of it all being house shows. And I know Cortez show isn't a house show, but our friend Robbie Banks invited us to play on Cortez with him and his bandmate Gemma. And I feel like a big part of what we like to do when we tour is like just see new places and find new things. And we've never been to Cortez before, and I've heard only good things about it. And it just seems like really aligned with how we want this whole tour to be, like playing in cool, unique spaces that aren't necessarily just loud bars or venues or anything like that, and explore the new songs in a different way, and every night in a different setting. And it just, when we were invited to play on Cortez, it just seemed perfect for this tour.
Thanks so much for speaking with me, Sam.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Louis Belcour, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Do you feel free now? Are you racking up the numbers, working through a summer that you won't recall? Have you lost it now? Unshakable but broken, every phrase a token of a morning song. It's soon to be decided on. We change today like a lullaby. Change today and let it go. Change the space that you occupy. gets too close.
A little bit of Sam Tudor, the song Do You Feel Free Now from the new record Hidden Minute. Sam Tudor's show just wrapped up, but they're local, so you'll see him around. You can find out more at samtudormusic.com. All right, now on to our feature for the day, which is an interview with digital artist Juan Ramirez, produced by CJSF Public Affairs Department Work Study William. And without further ado, here it is.
Hi, this is William Hofsink, speaking for CJSF Speak Out, and I am here with digital artist Juan Ramirez. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm originally from Colombia. I came to Canada in 2002 with my family when I was 14. I had the privilege to go into engineering, and I learned about electronic engineering in school. That's kind of my day-to-day job. And I had the opportunity to work on different projects like solar power lights, and now I'm working on methane detection systems. And art kind of has always been something that I've done my whole life. And then just in the last, probably since 2018, 2019, I started kind of going into more of a digital area just because it really worked well with my day job. And I was trying to find a way to combine both software and art in an interesting way.
That's really cool, because like I think what kind of drew me into your work when I was doing some like scrolling is you have a very optimistic perspective on the use of AI and I think new media in the art world that is kind of atypical from a lot of digital artists that I follow. And like I don't want to paint you as someone who is going who is like completely gung-ho about it, because you do have a nuanced perspective on it. But I'm wondering too, how do you think like the use of AI models as they become more like widely acknowledged, such as like Midjourney and Stable Diffusion, like how do you think they should be addressed in an artistic context? Or maybe you want to give a little bit of like background too on like what drew you into AI as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I started playing around with, I've known about AI and machine learning for a long time, and I used it in my work. So I'm familiar kind of the mechanisms that are used in order to create the systems. But then, you know, in 2020 and Midjourney and ChatGPT kind of started coming to age, and they became something in the mainstream. So I really started just going right deep into those systems and learning how they actually work and what they actually are and what they aren't. And it's really interesting from the technology perspective, which is I'm really interested in that and how they actually make all the systems work and the work that goes behind them. So I started thinking about, you know, everything in a system is inputs and outputs, right? And it was really interesting to see that all these companies have found these big data models that are publicly available, and they started training all these computers in how to generate images from this, you know, database of images that are being compiled into this data set. And the more I kind of dug into it, the more convinced I found myself thinking that this is going to be a new revolution. This is a new internet. And this is what the world is going to do for now. And it's going to become a part of our lives, whether we like it or not, just like social media did back in the day when people were just taking pictures of their food. And now there's whole businesses that are run on this technology. So right at the beginning, I thought we can't allow AI to become what social media became, which is we ignore it for a long time, which I did. I didn't have a Facebook page for a long time. You know, I'm not very good at it. I wish I was, but I'm not. I don't utilize it to its max potential. But this technology, AI, is even more scary. What can be done? If we are not educated on what its capabilities are and what the type of outputs that can be generated, then we as humans are going to suffer, because we're not going to be able to figure out what's real, what's not. We're not going to know that, oh, you can actually create whole deep fakes of people with their voice and their likeness.
I've seen it. It's uncanny. Yeah.
It's uncanny. Actually, I'm working on this article called Beyond the Uncanny Valley, right? Because for the, I don't know if you heard that concept of the, the uncanny, right? And I think we are going past that. And what lays beyond the uncanny valley? What happens when we actually can't tell, you know, anymore that something is not human? And I think we're getting to that point. The new ChatGPT model, the 4.0, as they call it, we're getting very close to not being able to differentiate that. And we need to be aware of that. And I thought as an artist that it would be good for me to show people what it can do and how it can be incorporated into your art practice. And I've done that now. We had a project in the summer, this Canada-wide project to celebrate the life of Jean-Paul Riopel, a famous Canadian artist. And our proposal was to create this program where we would go to high schools and we would teach kids in high school about Midjourney. AI image generator, and they would create images in the style of Jean-Paul Riopel, because that's one of the things you can do with AI. You can get these models to generate paintings in the style of a particular painter. So we were doing that, and it was really interesting to see these kids that weren't particularly artistic per se, some of them were, and learning about how to talk to this new, because it's a new way of programming. That's the way I see it.
Right.
It's a new programming language. It's not as straightforward as talking to you and I, like what we're doing right now. You have to have a little bit of knowledge of what you can do. And we, you know, we show them the good, the bad, how you could use it, how you could incorporate it into your art practice. And at the end, the kids generated the prompts that eventually became the images that were displayed at the Malahat Skywalk last summer.
That's really interesting too, because like, just kind of an aside as well. Yesterday was my mom's birthday, and we went out to a restaurant that had all themed after a 50s diner, but all of the art displays, we could tell very easily at this point that it's AI generated. Like the text was the text was a bit malformed.
Right.
The faces looked and that's like again a big worry that I've seen in the artistic community is that the art itself, almost becomes like a patchwork of other artists' designs, other aesthetic. And when you bring to mind, sorry, what was this artist you?
Jean-Paul Riopel.
Jean-Paul Riopel. Yeah, like I've seen specific models too. Like I had been experimenting with Suno, the music model, and they've actually put a ban on specific artists that they could imitate.
Specific name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm just wondering, like, what is the line between like tribute and plagiarism here? Because I think that is the one sort of area that I think I'm most wary of when I look into AI when I do my own research.
Right, and that's a great question. It's hard to figure out where that line is. I think personally what I do is whenever I use AI, anything that I work with, I'm outright and I say that I used it. So that's number one, is that you have to communicate to other humans that AI was used. And you're starting to see that in social media. When you make an Instagram post, you can tag something as made by AI. Mm. I think those are the things that we need to start doing. Maybe there's a way to automate the system. I don't know yet. But first is to be out front with what you're doing. If you're trying to trick people, I think that's where you cross that line. When you're trying to say that this is actually made by a human when it wasn't, that's the line to me. And the whole thing with plagiarism, I think we have to be careful as artists of what we're really mad about, right? Are we mad that this companies have taken our images and are training the models and they're profiting from our images? Is that what we're mad about? Or that the computer can actually generate something that is close to our style or to our actual work? What is it that we're actually concerned about? Because when you think about there have been cases previously with Google Images, for example. Google Images, Google is a company for profit. And when you go and you put Picasso or you put any artist, they will show you images of that artist, right? And
right.
they're using the Google search. They're making money out of that. But somehow we're not mad at that use of the technology. What's the difference between something that is being generated by this AI monster that can give you something in the style of Picasso or showing you a Picasso actual painting on a Google search? So, and what happened was that Google won. They said, well, we're not using this our technology is not being used to replicate their work. We're changing its use. And I think that's the criteria that we're going to fall into with this, all these AI companies, is that they're not saying that they're making art. They're saying that they're using it as a base for their models. And then the output and how people use it, that's the problem, right? It's the outcome and how people actually use the output of these machines that becomes the problem. So personally, I don't think people buy art because of the finished product. Sometimes it is, but I think people buy art because of the artist. People are really concerned about how the artist works, their process. We're always interested in how does an artist come up with a song, right? How does an artist come up with a painting? How do you think of this? And I think as artists, we need to start selling our process and our way of thinking. That's the part that makes it unique, right? Everyone says, oh, I could have done that. It's like, yeah, but you didn't. You didn't think about that. And that's the part that makes us unique. So we need to be able to be better at communicating, which I'm not the best, communicating our process. And I think that's what we need to focus on as artists.
I couldn't have put it better. Like, mind you, I dabble in music and I dabble in collages, which again, collage, that's another example of something where you're taking copyrighted material and putting a new spin on it. And even photography, right? Like, I think it took until the 90s where that was considered like true, or could be considered true high art. And so, like, yeah, it's kind of baffling to me too, would people put their nose up at. But you did mention too about like being interested in like the process of like music and how musicians might create art. And I've seen also that your visual art, I've seen some like punk iconography and lyricism. And I'm wondering too, like, how has music like specifically impacted your visual arts? Because like, I can imagine too, like
I'm a musician as well.
Oh. So.
Yeah, so definitely a lot. So that's, you know, that's something that is, you know, I've been playing music, my amps and my guitars are here. So I've been playing music for many years. And it's always interesting because I always like to learn about, like, you know, how you came up with what you came up with. And lyrics is a good example of, like, a lot of musicians, not all, obviously, they're all different, but they'll fit the lyric to the melody, right? Well, the lyric didn't really mean anything. They're trying to fit the words into a melody that they came up with because the melody is more important than the actual word they're using. And you see that with the Beatles, and you know, like you see that with how they came up with Yesterday. There was all, you know, they're always just making up words, and then later on they change the words to make it a little more interesting, but it's still, you know, serving the melody. So from that perspective, I'm always thinking kind of the same thing with my art. It's like, how do I serve the message that I'm trying to put out? And what is that message? And sometimes I don't have one. Sometimes I just make things because I want to make things or because I have an idea in my head. But sometimes I do think about what I'm making a little bit more. So, you know, that's kind of the benefit of being an artist, is you kind of get to make it up as you go.
Yeah. And like, correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of like my train of thought too, with wider access to AI models and like developing an understanding of the technology and the programming involved, it's almost very like punk in a way, like the do-it-yourself philosophy is really appealing. And obviously that's a component of art in general, but it's also been like the early days of computer, the early days of programming. Like that was, I think that was a very common intersection too. And like, I'm just wondering too. If that's part of the appeal. It's like one of the, like, because you also said too that like some of the students you were speaking with, they didn't really come across as like artistic or artistically inclined, but kind of getting that free range to a kind of create art in a different environment, like maybe in like a programming environment, is kind of like appealing.
So what we did, so I'll give you some examples of what we did, which you know turned out to be really good exercises. So the first thing we did is we had this picture that we found online of the silhouette of an elephant, like a profile of an elephant on a blue background, and it's sitting on a black floor. And then we said, we need to describe this image. We need to come up with a prompt so we can get the AI system to generate this image exactly like it is right now. So we need to be very specific. Which way is the elephant pointing? Is it pointing to the right, to the left? Which, you know, where is it standing on? What's the color of the background? So we were teaching them to observe things, how to observe things, how to describe things in a way. So, and then, you know, we did many iterations. At the end, they're like, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell that I needed four legs, because it didn't do four legs sometimes, because AI systems, you know, that was 2023. So they weren't as good as they are now. So it was making mistakes. So it was like, we need to be very specific, specify everything. Which way is the trunk going, right? So we did those exercises because we wanted to get at the end, when we were actually doing the real PEL prompts, so they can actually picture what they want at first in their head and then describe it in words, right? And then put it into the AI model and see what turned out. And this is a really good way to iterate through an idea really fast. You know, where traditionally maybe you get to two or three designs in a day, now I can go through hundreds of designs in a day and really pinpoint what I want and what I don't want, right? And some of the AI models have more options where I can really, like, tell it to be more creative and, you know, stylized, yeah, or whatever they call it, more chaos, as one of the parameters that Midjourney has. So you can iterate through ideas. Not only that, but you can say, okay, give me something in the style of Picasso and Monet, right? Combine those two. What would that happen? What if Picasso painted the space shuttle, something that he would have never seen, right? And or he never would have painted, or never would have had that as an image, right? So how do you combine those things? What do you put three different artists into it, and you tell the AI to combine all these styles? What if you take my painting and you tell it to, and you put a prompt that says painted in the style of Picasso? Now you're combining your own personal style with that, and you can iterate and be like, oh, I really like the way that this guy. Let me steal that. And it kind of comes back to collage, right? Where you can just take some of the ideas that AI has given you. And I do that in some of my works. Like, oh, I like this part. I'll take that only, and then I'll put my own spin to it. So what I told the students was, if you're using AI to be lazy, you're using it wrong, right? This is the first time that we're able to do something, learn something exactly like you need to learn it. Because you can tell it to do it in a way that, oh, okay, I'm in grade 7. Okay, give me a response in a grade seven reading level. Explain me this concept for a student in grade 12 or whatever it is, right? So you can really get the AI to give you results based on how you understand the world. So we never had that before. And we're seeing in teacher shortages, right, happening in the U.S. and Canada. We are, like, I don't know how old you are. You're probably in your early 20s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there you go. So, you know, by the time you have kids, right, your kids will have an AI assistant that they take on their tablets, and that's how they're going to learn, right? And ironically enough, I have learned more about artists using AI than previously. Because now I'm like, oh, what other artists can I combine? Who else does this?
The little quirks, right? Like, and what I mean, like, looking, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but it's like when you're looking at artistic movements, because I took some art history courses too, like, yeah. The expressionist movement is one I've always been really interested in, and I could imagine from an onlooker, a lot of it just looks like this very extravagant, like, bright colors, chaos, very angular, like, it can be kind of overwhelming, or like the Dadaist movement kind of just looks like nonsense. But then when you really get, but for me, what really helped is we had, like, specific deep dives on artists we wanted to cover and that we were interested in, but that took, like, a long part of the semester, took a long project for us to really come to those conclusions. But, like, I think what you're saying too is, like, when we start using AI more, it just makes it way more seamless.
It's way more seamless. AI can only expand your context. So, for example, like, I'm a good programmer. I've been doing it for almost 20 years now, right? I can program something with AI super fast. I can get a program done perfectly because I know exactly what I'm asking it to do. If you never build a website and you think you're going to build a website with AI, you're going to build a really crappy website, right? So it can only help you, it can only take you as far as your context is. So if you're a really good carpenter, it's going to really help you be a better carpenter. It's going to expand that context. So now with these tools, you can just keep adding more context into what you know. If you want to become a chemist, you can go and learn about that with AI. Say, hey, just give me a simple couple of questions to start, or give me some background. What is the first thing that I need to know as a chemist? You know, you can give the AI a job, a title, years of experience, and its output will be better. Because we need to understand that it's not really smart, right? It's all it's doing is taking this huge data set of knowledge and then giving you, every time, for example, ChatGPT, you ask a question, it gives you the very next word that would be the most likely word to come, right? In its response. That's all it's doing. It's just the next word. It's just guessing. It's doing a lot of computation analysis. What would be the most likely word that would go after the previous, you know, words that have come in my response? That's all it's doing. So when you start to understand that, you can leverage it, because you can say, hey, you are an expert professor in artistic studies. You have been teaching for 10 years. You have a PhD in this and that. Explain to me how I can incorporate Picasso style into watercolors. As an example.
Of course.
So, right? So exactly. You can just mix anything you want. Not only that, but you can say, like, give me ideas of how I can combine Picasso style into music, right? And it's like, oh,
that's exactly. Like, yes. Do you mean like matching the mood, kind of? Because I don't
matching
know
the
why.
Matching the mood, matching the colors, matching the strokes. I don't know. I never done this, right? But it could do that for you, and it would try to do it for you. Now, is it going to be good? I don't know. But maybe, you know, after, you know, 10, 20 iterations, you kind of having these conversations. Because I think that's the other thing, misconception. It's not like a one question, one answer. It's conversations that you have with the system. So when you look at my ChatGPT history, I have one that I have for months when I'm developing this application for my work. And I just continue to have a conversation because it knows the context, right? And I can continue to ask questions, and it just builds on what I've built before. But yeah, I mean, the amount of things you can combine now are endless. And that's the part that fascinates me. Mm-hmm. It's just the amount of iterations you can have on whatever way you can combine things that you never combined before. And we can do this now. We can get something to be written in the style of Malcolm Gladwell, right? Like you can get those results. You can get Malcolm Gladwell to write a Metallica song, right? And it can give you the chords. Right, and they can give you maybe I don't know the bridge.
Probably better than their more recent material, if I'm being honest.
There you go. So it's just unlimited potential for experimentation. So, but don't, you know? And I tell everybody, it gives you 60-70% of what you need. That extra 30%, 40%, that's gonna be you making it you. If you're just gonna take it and put it as your own, sure. I mean, if it's an email that is going to a colleague, fine, you can copy paste from ChatGPT, right? But if you're trying to write a paper, or if you're trying to come up with like a good song name or a good song idea, use it as a skeleton. Use it as a stepping stone. Don't just say like, oh yeah, I'm done, right? Because that's being lazy, and then you're not using it right. You're not improving your context. And that's what, every time you do an interaction with AI, you should be looking at, how is this going to expand my context of knowledge? So next time I use it, I'm exponentially better.
It's like seeing those obviously faked essays where it's like, sorry, as a language learning model, I cannot accomplish the following.
Yeah, exactly. They used it wrong.
Yeah. So on a bit of another note, but I've also seen beyond like your use of AI, you've also explored augmented reality and its ability to highlight the mundane, kind of in concession with one another. Like I've seen one, I think your most famous series, the one on like the BC landmarks and areas, but I've also seen images you've done of like overlaying artwork onto reality. And I'm just wondering, what other possibilities do you think like augmented reality could possess in artistic context, or also in conjunction with AI?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think if I had to bet on AR versus VR, right? Virtual reality versus augmented reality, I would go with augmented reality. I think monitors have maybe a five year lifespan. There's already a laptop that's being sold that comes with no monitor. It's just a keyboard, and you get glasses with it, and you get unlimited screens. Well, not unlimited, but you know what I mean. You get this virtual augmented reality screens. So I think we're going to see the death of the monitor very soon. I would say 5 years. I would give it. I think we're going to see it in schools. We're going to see it for, like, I've seen it with surgeons when, like, they're doing surgery, and then they just look here, and then they have the diagram of what they were working on, write notes to themselves. They can interact with this without taking their gloves off, right? Cool. So I think for a lot of industries, we're going to start seeing that move into, and I mean, obviously, like, the glasses will have to get better. Like, you know, there's a lot of technological things that need to happen, but we're in that direction already. Like, Apple already has a foot into that market. Obviously Meta and a bunch of other players have already been in there. I don't see it for a lot of people, but I see it for, like, I would use it in my work. I would love to have more than two screens, right? And not, you know, just have them everywhere. That would be great for me. You know, I need a little windows open. I need my terminal, I need my two, you know, programming, my browser, things like that. So it will be great to have that ability. So obviously they need to get a lot more comfortable for you to wear them. There's a lot of safety concerns, you know, it's all that, but I do think that we're moving towards that. So AR is very important to me. Combining AR and AI is pretty fun, because you get, like, some really interesting things, and then and you put them into AR, and all of a sudden you can look at them from different angles. So my goal has been to take AI generated images, which are 2D, and how do I make them 3D? How do I modify them within this AR software so they can be viewed from different angles? And all of a sudden, I'm looking at an image or an art-generated image from a different angle, right? How do I make it interesting? How do I make them the real world? Mm-hmm. Not only that, but then I can make it really small, what is on top of my laptop, and I can go in a field and make it really big. So I think that sense of being able to change scales really easily makes it really interesting as a medium for art.
Yeah, no. Is there, like, a, like, philosophical goal you have there? Like, not to sound all pretentious and all that, but I'm kind of curious too. Like, do you want to, like, almost bring the ideal into reality in some way? I mean, I guess that is kind of the goal of art in general. But, like, yours in particular, it's so much of it rests on, like, the conjunction between the imagined and the mundane. And I was mm-hmm. wondering, like, is there something else to that? If I'm not making sense.
No. It makes sense. I mean, what I would say is that, you know, how I started in this whole path of because I used to, you know, I was doing traditional art before. I sold a couple of paintings that I did by hand. But then, you know, I had my first child, and I was like, well, I can't just take time to go and work in a studio. Like, this is not going to work out. Like, you know, so my thought, I need to be able to do art in a way that I can be right next to my son when he's little and I can still do something. So that was a transition. That was the motivation for mm-hmm. doing it. And then I was like, okay, I'll get a tablet. And so then I was like, okay, I'm just trying to replicate the analog into the digital. And I'm not really doing anything digital per se. Like, it's just, you know, it's the, what is the, I forget the word, but essentially you're just replicating analog, you know, pencil and paper on a tablet on your screen. So I wasn't really happy with the results. And then I had this idea of what is the, like, the number one free resource on the internet that I can grab at any point that I want. And I was like, images. There are tons of images of anything you can think of, right? And then I learned this technique of, like, pixel sampling, I call it, where, you know, everything on a screen is made out of ones and zeros, right? Every color is just a number. Mm. And with Photoshop, I can go and say, okay, give me all the pixels that are this number or this shade or whatever. And then I can lift those pixels. So, for example, like, you're wearing a white shirt right now, right? I could go and select, yeah, and some green. So I can select just the white pixels of your shirt and then do something with that, right? So then I started seeing the world a little bit different. And, like, every little thing could be something else. So if you look at my phone, it's just pictures of random stuff. So when you talk about the mundane, I started kind of seeing like, oh, the cracks in the, if you ever look at the cracks on the pavement, right? They make the perfect mountains. They're the perfect mountains, like on the pavement or on like a sidewalk. Look at that. If you ever go to the park and you see those little yellow pylons that prevent people from driving through.
Yeah.
If you're looking right from the top, they make the perfect little planets. They have like the perfect texture for a planet or for a sun. So I use that all the time, like logs, just anything. I'm just like looking at things and I'm like, oh, that could be a good cloud. Oh, that could be. Okay, great. So I have a few videos on my Instagram, probably a couple of years back now, where I'm just walking around, I take pictures of random stuff, and then I come back and I make a painting out of it.
I gotta take a look.
And I was doing that. That was in 2020 when I started doing that process. And we went on 2019, we went to a trip with my wife, and we came back with all these pictures, right? And then she was like, we're never going to print any of them. Like, it's like, can you do something with them? So she kind of gave me the idea. I was like, yeah, I think so. So then I came up with this idea of like, okay, what if I take a bunch of pictures? Like, just, okay, from here, I'll make the clouds from this coffee shop in Copenhagen that we really like doing it every day. I'll take the phone from that, and that'll be the clouds. And then this will be the sun, and this will be this will be that. And then I made this little collage for her. And then she really liked it. And, you know, I was kind of showing it at this art show in 2020. And this couple asked me to help them do, they were celebrating their 20-year anniversary. And said, can you do something with our wedding album? And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. So they gave me the wedding album, like actual photos from like 2001 or whatever it was. So they gave me the album. I scanned them all. I interviewed them. I needed to find out what was important, what was funny, what was sad, what happened during the wedding. And so then I had this story that I could tell. And then I just went and I took things from the pictures and I started just plucking them in, trying to, and then, you know, they gave me some artistic idea of what they wanted, what they didn't want, right? And then I started kind of putting it together, putting their photos. So like, you know, like the silhouette of his face is here, and like the guitar that they use that makes this path here. And I think it's also in my Instagram somewhere. So I was using their images to create a painting. And at the end, my favorite part was they didn't want to see it, which was scary enough for me. They didn't want to see any process. They just went to the final piece. So I brought it to their house, set up a little camera, and it was them and their son. And so they kind of knew my work, and they knew that I put things, you know, I hide things and kind of like little Easter eggs everywhere. So then I revealed the painting and they're like, oh, is that? And they were just spending like 20 minutes looking at every single thing, trying to figure out where it came from. So there is something about bringing the mundane into the main, I don't know what to call it. The mundane into the abstract, I would say. That's what I would say.
That's really cool. So you know what that reminds me of almost? Like, yeah, again, it's another music reference, but like sampling. Like, it's basically like the visual equivalent of like sampling, like turning, especially like plunderphonics. Like, are you familiar with that term? Yeah, plunderphonics, like what the Avalanches have done, like just taking, whether it be like comedy sketches or obviously like just this, you know, just like maybe one drum part from one song from like 40 years ago and then fusing it into something entirely new just to like reflect your own. That's really cool. Yeah. Like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the idea. So instead of like being from a song, it's just like, you know, like I would just think, oh, I like the lights that they had in the background. That's going to be this. And, you know, and then so I remember that I told him I'm not going to use anything that is not from your pictures. And then I was at the end of it and I was like, I was missing something. I don't know what. So I just showed some of my friends. I was like, hey, I'm working on this. Like, what would you guys add to this? And then one of my friends is like, you should add birds. And I was like, because it's kind of like this nice landscape, right? And I said, birds, they don't have any birds in their photos. I can't use any birds. So I was going through the pictures and there was one where she's getting ready. And and every bride kind of has this picture is her getting her dress all set up. And they put those little clippies, like, you know, those like clothesline clips.
Yeah.
She had all this all on her back where they were adjusting things. And I was like, huh. So then I sampled, and there were like different colors. So I sampled the clips. And if you take like two clips, you can kind of cross them on Photoshop and then make this little bird. They look like birds. So I put them there. And sure enough, the first thing she said, she looked at me and was like, there were no birds in the picture. And it's like, I know. those are not birds. And it's like, what is that? And so she's looking at all her pictures and she couldn't figure out. It's like, it's from your clips. Those little clips made the birds on your dress. So yeah, it's an interesting process. I mean, you need to kind of learn the story of what makes this the moment interesting to them. And I, you know, they were pretty happy. I moved after and now we're pretty close neighbors, so I see them all the time. So
that's
kind of yeah.
Mm. So there's going to be one last one last question if you still have your time.
Yeah, go ahead.
It might be a bit of a difficult one, but I'm genuinely curious. And you've spoken on the topic of immigrating from Colombia under duress as a teenager. Mm-hmm. Do you think that has almost informed your like perspectives on art in any ways? How has your life experience there like informed you as a creator? Like I'm kind of curious. Is if that's all right to ask?
Yeah, for sure. It's totally all right to ask. That's a good question. I don't think nobody's ever asked me that in that way. I don't know if I would say consciously, but I mean, definitely musically, for sure. Like that's definitely something that I go back to and I'm very, I think because I'm doing this whole sampling thing, I'm able to, you know, it's good and bad. It's a curse and a blessing. I'm able to like, you know, when you listen, and it probably happens to you when you're a musician, you listen, oh, like, I really like that bass line. I just like the bass line. And you just kind of focus on the one. Sounds like, oh, is that tambourine or is that maraca? What is that going on? So I've gotten used to doing that all the time. So I do pick up like, you know, the rhythms and riffs, you know, from Latin music all the time. Artistically, though, like, you know, I wasn't really doing that in the, my wife. I wasn't really doing a lot of, I didn't do a lot of collages. I started doing collages here. So I'm trying to think back. I wasn't doing a lot of art, like visual art back then. I was mostly focused on music when I was in Colombia. So I don't know if there was a lot, although my parents, they would take me to like, you know, art museums and things like that. But I was really focused on music. I was in a music conservatory at the time. So yeah, I don't know if it affects my art, probably more like my way of thinking about things and, political views and things like that, probably more.
Which I could definitely see, like, I could definitely see, like, there's a very socialist appeal almost libertarian socialist appeal to having like the AI models readily accessible and basically making artistic inspiration, artistic, I think artistic resources part of like everyday life in ways that they weren't before. So. Again, like just kind of like my read from the situation too. But sure. It's really interesting to hear that. Like, anyways,
yeah,
real anything pleasure,
else, sure.
I got real pleasure meeting you and speaking with you. I'll send you, or I'm not entirely sure if you would get the recording.
I'll get it. It's gonna process, so they'll send me an email when it's ready, and it's gonna be a Google Drive link. So I can forward that to you after it's done.
Yeah, and you can send me like if there are a couple parts you wanted like to cut out, because I know there's maybe some like stammering on my part or something.
Same here.
I don't know, I'll try and make it as like reflective as possible.
Seamless.
Yeah, but anyway,
just put it through AI.
It was an absolute pleasure speaking with you. And
yeah. Likewise. Oh, hey, I'll give you one tip that I learned. So with Sono, right? You were talking about Sono, and you can't say like, you know, I was trying to make something Tom Waits-y, right? Because I'm a big Tom Waits fan. And I was like, won't let me put Tom Waits. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. So I went to ChatGPT and I asked ChatGPT to describe Tom Waits' style in the form of a prompt, and then I was able to put that into Sono, and they got something that was pretty Tom Waits-y, I would say.
Yeah, like I wanted to make like a Jeff Buckley folk metal song, but now I guess now I
you can
kind
get
of
Jeff like, Buckley like explain as a prompt and then put it back into
yeah,
Sono.
Exactly. Like yeah. These kind of those what ifs are really interesting to me, and I think again like that is so appealing in new media art, not even just like AI, but just new media in general. Yeah. I'm friends with a lot of new media artists, and they've all talked about like how kind of getting to understand those systems is so gratifying, because like it really brings like their creativity out in a way that just like one like traditional art, digital art, and even music doesn't really reflect. But I really love talking with you, and
Man, anytime.
I need to catch up with more of your stuff. So glad we finally got to connect. Yeah, and sure. would you like to plug your like socials or your website?
Just my socials, Instagram is my main thing at one of these. I think closing thoughts would be just experiment, like really like anything, that you can think of, just put it in there, have a conversation, enjoy the results. It's an interesting time to be alive. Like, nobody has ever had a technology quite like this. I know everybody says that every time there's something new, but it's only going to get more ingrained in our everyday. I think like if you look like 5 years into the future, it's just going to be something that we just take for granted. And it will open up avenues for people that were not participating in the digital transformation of their companies or their schooling or their lives because they just didn't have the capabilities or the technical abilities. And that's going to also change things.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, I know speaking from my experience, I've kind of been discouraged from a lot of like traditional art because of my like motor output issues. But I think like encouraging, I guess that, encouraging a certain level of independent study of looking into these systems rather than just discouraging them outright could be really useful for people who people like me who might find like the traditional rote training in artwork a bit frustrating in some way. And
that's a great point. I mean, I never thought about asking AI to give you, like, put in your particular, motor skills issues that you may have, and then ask it to, like, give you suggestions on how to incorporate it into art.
No, I was thinking of, like, more, like, learning the programming to compensate in some way, but no, that's actually another good way to think.
Lean into it. Lean into it because you might come up with like, you might come up with like, okay, maybe it's I'm surprised every time. Like I tried giving it drugs the other day. It's like, hey, act as an artist who has taken LSD, and it's trying to explain a dream that it had. And then so then I gave some ideas of like what to talk about, and they created like this amazing LSD experience. And it was like, so you can like really explore like different, even mental states, and try to get it to get you outputs in that mental state.
That's so cool.
It's crazy, man. I'm like blown up every day. I'm like, what if I do this? What if I do that? Okay, that worked. And like now you can put an image in it and you can tell it to explain it to you, to describe it as a art curator, right? They can give you all those like detail wording that you might not know about. Like, you know, all the terminology that I've learned because of it is just great. I mean, it's just, I can keep talking about this for hours.
Same here.
But yeah.
All right then. So again, pleasure talking to you. I'll let you know when we'd be airing, and that's at CJSF 90.1 that FM at CJSF 90.1 FM. William Hofsink signing out with Juan Ramirez. Take care.
You too, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks to William for putting that together. This has been Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Democracy Now! Is on right about now. So enjoy. I'll see you next time.